This is Hope Solo, and you're listening to Hope Solo Speaks. After last week's episode, I received many texts and messages from people asking me what in the world the huge and historic piece of legislation was that I referred to in my excitement to the start to 2023. The Equal Pay for Team USA Act. Most of us have never even heard about it, which is astonishing since many of us have been vocal in our desire for equal pay and blanketed equality. Now, this really has nothing to do with the U.S. Women's National Team Class Action Equal Pay Settlement, which only affects those players in the class action suit, all, of course, women soccer players. The Equal Pay for Team USA Act is much more far-reaching than a settlement for select female soccer players, and it impacts men and women alike. It affects all national teams in the United States and all sports representing our country. We have become used to hearing a lot about equal pay. We hear from those who are loud and celebratory, but what does it really take to make legislation? How difficult is it? How does it begin? And how does a piece of paper end up on the president's desk to be signed and put into law? I assure you that it is no easy task, that it doesn't happen overnight, and that many faces are fighting and pulling strings outside of the glory and away from the cameras. There are many hardworking men and women who have helped pave the way to a better sports landscape for both athletes and fans. I never understood the hard work that it took until I met the dedicated individuals at Sports Fans Coalition. Sports Fans Coalition is a national nonprofit advocacy organization devoted to representing fans wherever public policy impacts the games we love. They are best known for leading the campaign to end the Federal Communications Commission sports blackout rule, which was accomplished in 2014, despite massive opposition from the NFL and broadcast industry. They also created the Sports Bettors Bill of Rights, a set of five principles believed should accompany sports betting legislation to protect consumers while maximizing state revenues. These principles now govern sports betting in DC, Maryland, and Virginia. The right for fans to transfer their tickets to their friends and family is another perennial issue of SFC. And of course, most recently, Sports Fans Coalition worked to get the Equal Pay for Team USA Act signed into law. SFC has been at the forefront of consumer advocacy in the sports policy arena. They have carved a niche as a leading advocacy organization devoted to America's sports fans, and they are a perpetual underdog. SFC has never shied away from a fight with organizations bigger than them. And they have often overcome those odds to protect sports fans from the leagues and corporations that seek to harm them. Whether it's the NFL, Ticketmaster, or the casino industry, SFC will always stand on the side of the fan and make sure that lawmakers hear from an often overlooked constituency. Sports Fans Coalition has an admirable resume, and I am proud to be on the board alongside Chairman David Goodfriend, Habiba Alcindor, Brian Frederick, Chris Lewis, Mark Walsh, Dave Zirin, and of course, Executive Director Brian Hess. Let's remember that to the rest of the world, the United States represents a promise of equality for all. The 117th Congress occurred during a historic time when two Olympic Games were held, and while a country known for human rights abuses hosted a World Cup. Through that lens, our leaders made it clear to the world that Americans believe all athletes should have equal pay, training, and access to medical care and other forms of compensation, regardless of gender. And the Equal Pay for Team USA Act was signed into law on January 5th, 2023. To walk us through the trials and tribulations is Executive Director of SFC, Brian Hess. Welcome, Brian. Thanks for joining us today. First, I have to say congratulations and thank you for all the hard work that you and Sports Fans Coalition has done to help our national team athletes get equality regardless of gender.
Well, thank you. It could not have been done without you. We've been working with you now 5 years, it seems like. It seems longer, actually. But it's been a long fight, and advocacy is a team sport. So it's not just Sports Fans Coalition. There's countless of other organizations and people that we've worked with to really finally get this bill over the finish line.
Of course. But I am giving thanks in particularly to Sports Fans Coalition. For all the hard working men and women and dedicated men and women behind the scene that we often don't get to hear about. We often don't get to see the steps that it takes to make history. And that's why I'm having you on the show today. So Sports Fans Coalition was established in 2009, and they have been at the forefront of sports advocacy ever since, which is absolutely remarkable. SFC took on the NFL in big broadcast to overturn the sports blackout rule in 2014. They created the Sports Bettors Bill of Rights, which now governs sports betting in several states. And SFC has worked to pass dozens of laws at the state level protecting consumers in the live event ticketing industry. Now, these are major policies that you guys are tackling, and you're taking on major corporations like the NFL, Ticketmaster, and even the casino industry. It's remarkable. And you've actually walked away with a lot of success. So as I said, many of us don't see these steps and the hard work behind the scenes. Can you walk us through what the general process is that you guys go through and how you decide which issues to take on?
How we decide is largely dictated by the fans. We see issues pop up in the news, or we hear directly from fans that say, you know, such and such company is treating us poorly. They're, you know, I can't watch my baseball games because of the blackout rules, or when the sports betting prohibition was overturned by the Supreme Court, we knew that this was going to be rife for problems. Right, we were going to have a problematic product that is proven to be addictive, going after a passionate fan base. You know, it was a recipe for disaster unless we stepped in and said, here are the protections that we want as consumers that make sure that people at risk for gambling addiction have some recourse, have somewhere to fall back to. And so it's, you know, we hear a lot from fans as well that, you know, experience these things firsthand. And I think when it comes to the equal pay issue, right, you could say, well, this is not an issue that necessarily impacts the fans, but it was an issue that the fans wanted. And I think it's no better proof of that than after, you know, the Women's World Cup last time when we started chanting equal pay, equal pay. You know, we hear this is what the fans want. And so that's when we started really pushing to pass the Equal Pay for Team USA Act.
Which obviously we're going to get into, which is historic and incredible. And like you said, it took many years to finally get done. Walk me through how Sports Fans Coalition began in the first place.
It started with an idea by our chairman, David Goodfriend. He started this in 2009 when he realized that sports fans are passionate and wanted to realize, is there a way to harness that passion for positive change? There's a joke in DC about how everyone's got a trade association or everyone's got an advocacy group, even the houseplant lovers, right? Well, at the time, sports fans had nobody. There was nobody advocating for fans, and yet football, baseball, soccer, basketball, they would all claim they advocated on behalf of their fans. But you don't hear, you know, big banks say they advocate on behalf of their consumers, right? The companies never care about the consumer's best interest. And so we stepped in and said, hey, we're going to do that for you. And that really took culmination of a years-long fight to overturn the sports blackout rule. Back then, if you didn't sell enough home tickets to your football game, the NFL could black out the broadcast to your local network, you know, which fans who are in wheelchairs, who can't easily access sports stadiums, couldn't see their game. We've heard from fans who had PTSD and loud noises were triggering to them, you know, so a stadium is not a safe environment for them. And so we were able to prove that was not in the economic best interest of the league to black out, but it was also not in the social and the public interest for people to not be able to access the games that honestly, most of these stadiums were paid for by taxpayer dollars anyway, and they're being broadcast on public airwaves. Anyone should have access to them when they need to. So we fought that in 2014, we got that rule overturned at the FCC. And then from there, we've just taken on the slew of other issues.
Man, David meets Goliath, huh?
Yeah. We like that analogy a lot around here.
So we're here today specifically to celebrate Of course, the trials and tribulations of American politics, we should always celebrate them. But we're also here today to celebrate this historic bill that was signed into law on January 5th by President Biden, the Equal Pay for Team USA Act. Now, can you explain what this act entails? And it doesn't have to do with just pay, does it?
No, it's not just pay. It's also access to medical treatment, training facilities, travel arrangements, pretty much any form of compensation that a male athlete receives, women athletes will receive as well. As long, you know, making sure that they're equal. There are a couple of small exceptions around like seniority or merit. But in general, it's equal now. There's also a really good requirement that, you know, for those international sports that have different winnings when it comes to, you know, men's and women's sports, such as, you know, the World Cup, the pot for men's soccer is a lot bigger. There is a requirement that these national governing bodies now advocate to equalize those payouts as well, realizing that, you know, that's going to be another fight, another long, long process, and one that Congress can't necessarily solve, but that our NGBs now have to work to equalize those winnings as well. And there's also now a reporting requirement. So we, every year, we'll get an annual report that says, this is how much we paid our athletes, men, women, disaggregated by race as well. So we can really see if there are any other pay disparities that we need to address in the future. So this is a big win. You know, we'll know next year how well it's worked, but we'll this is good.
Now, who do these reports go to?
They go to this to Congress, and specifically the U.S. Senate Commerce Committee, as well as the House Judiciary Committee, which both committees will oversee the Ted Stevens Act, which is how we set up our Olympic structure. Those reports will go to those members, and then they will get to review them and decide how to act on that information.
So all national governing bodies, so our Olympians, our national teams, those who represent the United States in sports, should be affected by this new enacted law. But who is the oversight committee to enact this law? Would that be the United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee?
Yes. Yeah, so the Ted Stevens Act is what charters USOPC. And so this bill amends aspects of that part of US code. So yeah, the USOPC, which governs all NGBs, will ultimately be the ones impacted and make sure that the NGBs are complying.
Okay, so we are hoping that we can trust the United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee, the USOPC, to be the oversight committee that we hope them to be. We've seen them fail in the past. This law, the Equal Pay Act and Title VII, does cover some of these issues in the Team USA Act, Equal Pay for Team USA Act. They are similar, but the Equal Pay Act in Title VII was put into law in 1963, but it's never really been enforced. That's why we're still having class action lawsuits to this day for equal pay. What makes this different? Is it because the NGBs have more of a direct path to be held accountable?
I think so. And I also want to say, with the Equal Pay for Team USA Act, there is a provision to make sure it doesn't conflict with other aspects of US code. So this shouldn't have any negative impact on the Equal Pay Act generally. I think what makes this a little different is this annual reporting provides accountability. And so we will know if USOPC is doing their job. We will know if there is an NGB in specific that's not doing their job. And we will be able to address that accordingly. And so we have that better information from this.
And information is power, as we all know. So set the stage here for us, will you, Brian? Where did this all begin? I mean, you've seen many people, many celebrities, many teams fight for equality, fight for equal pay, fight for more equitable positions in their work industries. You see it all over the place. It's been loud. It's been broadcasted worldwide. We've impacted other countries in our fight for equality. Like I said, you see it in Hollywood with actresses, with professional athletes, both men and women. And it took, you know, it's taken, 10 years? I believe the national team started this fight back in 2015 when I still was on the team. So set the stage for us. We have been fighting all these huge voices have been fighting. Where did this idea come from for Sports Fans Coalition to get involved and to create their own act to help support the fight for equal pay and for equality?
For SFC in particular, I would say 2018, the U.S. Soccer Federation presidential election. We saw that. We saw the relationship between MLS and some and all of the other conflicts of interest and realized like we should get involved and make sure that fans have a voice when it comes to the election. So we traveled to, all of their sites or wherever they were having conventions and meetings. We bought billboards around their vote and, we went all out. And that's actually where we met you. And while we had supported the, equal pay before, we had never really done a big fight for it at that point. And, our conversations that we had together, really did inspire the coalition. Like, this is something that we should make sports fans big, big fight. It's important. It's a good issue. And we have really good champions that we can rely on. And so you and I started talking more and we started, strategizing, creating what are we going to do? How are we going to push this legislation? It took that was 2018. I remember you and I marched around from senator to senator's office together, pushing this kind of bill and some other reforms that we wanted to see. We just kept that steady drumbeat. And that's really what advocacy is about, is just constantly pushing forward, moving the ball inch by inch towards the end zone. You're very rarely going to have that big, quick, easy, passing. It's going to take time. We went through several different bills and iterations of other legislation that would have achieved the same goal through a little different means until we eventually landed on S2-2333 this past year.
Oh, you're going way back to the election. Speaking of the election, actually, it just came up last week with Eric Winalda, who came on the podcast, and we reminisced quite a bit. So excuse me for reminiscing again for all you listeners out there. But I do want to make it clear that I ran in the election for president of U.S. Soccer to get these issues out. It was very important to me to talk about these women's issues, to talk about equal pay, and to talk about how the women's team was treated. So to meet advocacy groups like yourself, to meet state associations, and to hear the other problems within youth soccer and soccer overall in America, it impassioned me to fight for those who don't have a voice. And I'll look back forever, and that was a rocky time and a stressful time and a maddening time, but I met some incredible, passionate people who really care about the sport and care about causes that are important to society. So I'm very honored to have met you throughout the election. And then as we reminisce, stomping through meeting U.S. senators at the Capitol, I haven't thought about that lately, very recently. And looking back, how bizarre was that? All the different personalities of the United States senators, every single person that we met. Very intrigued, very curious about what we had to offer and what we had to say. But of course, slow moving, 5 years later, here we are. At what point do you remain hopeful or do you give up hope? Because we sat in those rooms. I remember talking to senators about pheasant hunting.
Yep.
It was an incredible experience, and I see how you get celebrities, you get athletes, you get people in there with a name, with a face, and you try to push for policy change. And it doesn't always work, but you're hoping for the best. And tell us kind of after we do all that, where do you go from there? Because you start to lose hope, 5 years later, you're not sure you're going to get legislation passed. You have to remain patient, I imagine. I imagine that you're constantly on your computer, sending emails, constantly on the phone. At what point do you say, okay, this isn't going anywhere, or do you just keep pushing?
It's hard to say. I maybe to be a little bit of a cliche of a advocate here, but I kind of liken it to golf in that you're going to hit a lot of really bad balls and they're going to shank a lot and you're going to miss a lot. But then you get that one hit and it brings you right back in. And that kind of was how it was with this bill. Is there was a lot of pushing, a lot of meetings saying, now's not the time, come back to us next month, come back to us next month. Other priorities are boiling up. We have a global pandemic and other, and needing relief bills. And then you get that one email on a random Tuesday and it just says, hey, the bill's going to the markup. And it's just like, okay, now this is real. This is live again. And you get really, really reinvigorated. And so it's for that, like it's, I never like to give up hope because you never know when that one opportunity is going to present itself. And, you know, we had the bill kind of languish for a while or whether or not it was going to be reintroduced as Congress because so many other priorities came up. You know, we did have a global pandemic, which caused the entire Congress's agenda to shift. And a lot of our champions were very involved in those negotiations. So it was hard to get that attention, which is why I think your letter that you sent with Lisa Stoya and Nikki Iser-Brown in May was so influential, saying it's time that we live up to our promise and we reintroduce this bill. And, you know, a couple months later, it was reintroduced. You know, getting that bill finally, you know, that statement out there, that reintroduction kind of gives you enough energy to keep going for the next several months and keep pushing. And then there's countless Hill meetings and emails and you kind of start to lose a little momentum and then it gets right back up there when you get that, you know, the bill's going to markup, the bill's passed the Senate, the bill, you know, and you keep going.
Brian, as you said, it takes a lot of people to get things done and we wouldn't be here today without the coaching staff at the University of West Virginia, Nikki Brown and Lisa Stoya, who wrote a letter to Senator Capito to help get the ball rolling once again. So I must commend them. I must thank them for their support in this because we wouldn't be here without them as well. And thinking back to all the things that we went through, you know, walking Capitol Hill, writing letters, Zoom calls. I'll never forget meeting my local congresswoman, Congresswoman Fox out of Wilkes County. I met her to talk about what we saw as a very bipartisan bill. I walked her through everything that was in it, and I met her at the Republican House, the local Republican House in a very small town in Wilkes County. And, you know, it was decorated and all Trump stuff. People were very energetic about Donald Trump and it was, you know, everybody had their hats on. It was a very small house. And I go in there thinking, okay, I'm ready for this meeting with my local congresswoman. I'm ready. I'm going to get her so excited to push for this new act, you know, and equality for Olympic athletes. Who could ever go against, you know, these are athletes that represent our country. Why should they be treated differently? So I felt really good and confident about it. And I go in there and there's no meeting room. I'm pregnant, by the way. So I'm waddling around with my belly and I meet her in the bathroom. We have a meeting with her aide in the bathroom while I'm pregnant to go over this act that I'm hoping she'd sign off on. And I remember losing hope in that moment. She was a very nice woman. You know, she took the time to meet me. Granted, it was in the bathroom of a small Republican house, but she took the time to meet me. And we had probably spent about 20 minutes in that bathroom. Very awkward, mind you. But we went through the bill and the act and every detail in it. And at the end, she told me, I don't think that it is bipartisan. It takes one little tiny word that will get picked apart, that will play side against side. And that is why, for me personally, she said, I do not put my name on very many legislation. So it kind of broke my heart in that moment because in my eyes, I'm like, why not try to make a difference? You know, in this arena as well, she loved sports. It seemed like the perfect person to go to get them excited about it. But then to hear a congressman or woman or a senator say, you know, everything in this day and age is partisan. I don't even want to put my name on it. I'm not even going to try. Don't get me started because it will get picked apart and you don't understand. It could be one word, one paragraph, one sentence that will fail this bill. And it broke my heart. I remember calling you after, Brian, and I was like, I don't know what to do. I mean, I don't know where to go now, but you obviously had a plan. You knew there were many places to go. But in that moment, I was a little brokenhearted to see how American politics work.
I was a little brokenhearted too. I mean, I remember you calling me after that and telling what happened. I had high hopes. I was like, she's your member of Congress. You are her constituent making this request. The calculus to me all added up. Unfortunately, that is an issue that we see, though, with a lot of legislation, in and out of sports, and all of our legislative actions. It can get tricky. It can get hard. That bill we were talking to at the time was a House version of the bill, and it was just Democratic. There weren't any Republican co-sponsors at the time. The Senate version had a Republican, so we could still claim it was bipartisan. But right, there could have just been that one thing that some
other member. But it takes time to get the one Republican signing, right? I mean,
right. It can take time to convince that one to make an official bill bipartisan, which is really what made the Senate version of this bill and the one that eventually came out the next Congress, because that was last Congress's bill, so special. Was that from the gate, it had Cantwell and Capito, two of the most prominent women senators there. Then right after, it had Klobuchar, Democrat from Minnesota, and then Lummis, Republican from Wyoming. There was no question this bill was bipartisan. And even between those four members of Congress, there's a diverse perspective and political ideology. So it was special. But then the other thing that really made it special was the timing. This Congress, the 117th Congress, which just wrapped up, was the only Congress in American history that has had two Olympic events and a World Cup at the same time. And that's because we had, COVID canceled, the Olympics, and they got squashed together with the winter. And, so it was a unique opportunity in which U.S. international sport was front and center for pretty much the entire time. And we were able to ride that momentum to ultimately pass this bill.
So timing is obviously very important to get these things done. Yes. And as you said, through the COVID-19 pandemic, this Congress was able to experience two Olympics, one World Cup where human rights abuses were highlighted. And it brought a lot of attention in the United States on what we need to do, obviously hosting the 2026 World Cup, but more than that, what we need to do to protect our athletes and to push for equality. And we showed the rest of the world that. And it is incredible timing, and it will probably never happen in history where one Congress gets to see two Olympics and one World Cup.
Yeah. I mean, the only way it happens again is there's another pandemic, and I really hope that doesn't happen.
Yeah. Hopefully not in my lifetime.
Timing is a very critical element to all this kind of advocacy and making sure that we get the right people in place. And, it's a very much like if you build it, they will come. Mm-hmm. And you've got to have that infrastructure ready so that when the moment strikes, everyone's ready to go and ready to activate.
Well, you have the mindset and the patience for this, as I assume most everybody does at Sports Fans Coalition. I do not, but I'm proud to be on the board. And I'll never forget also Zooming with Senator Cantwell's team. And I got a little emotional and aggravated. I'm like, why are we waiting? Why is this taking so long? Let's just get this shit done. Let's move forward. Let's do this. I mean, let's put this into law. What are we waiting for? And I remember I kind of looked at you on the Zoom and I was like, ooh, maybe I need to tone it back a little because I'm passionate about this. And more than that, it is law, by law in 1963 with the Equal Pay Act and Title VII. So why are we waiting so long to actually make moves and make something happen and hold people accountable? Like you said, this act is really going to enforce everybody, NGBs and the USOPC, to be held accountable. And right now with the 1963 Equal Pay Act and Title VII, nobody's been held accountable. So this is a faster route to accountability, I believe. And so that's why I lost patience in that Zoom call. I don't even know if you know, but I remember looking at you and I was like, okay, I'm going to scale it back just a little bit. You do have the patience and the mindset to get these things done, which is remarkable. So again, I want to thank everybody at SFC and I want to thank you. But what else makes this bill so remarkable in terms of how it got passed through regular order?
Yeah, so it's very, very rare now that significant pieces of legislation pass through how a bill becomes a law, the schoolhouse rock song, right? We're all taught that a bill gets introduced in one of the chambers, either the House or the Senate. It gets debated, it gets voted on, it goes to the other chamber, it gets voted on, it goes to the president. That almost never happens anymore. Usually what ends up happening is you'll have some big package that's got 1,000 different priorities on it. And that everyone's kind of what we call Christmas treeing it. And so just throwing on any kind of amendment that they can and forcing it through. That's how most significant policy gets done these days. It's very rare that something that beyond just, you know, renaming a post office gets passed through regular order. And that's what happened with this. And what's, you know, even more surprising is once the ball got rolling, there was almost no opposition. You know, we had the bill, we went through a couple rounds of negotiations after shortly after introduction with USOPC and some of the national governing bodies just to get, and it was mostly technical amendments and getting the language crafted in the right, just the right way. So that way there was no room for misinterpretation, right? There was no room to you know, pull some shenanigans. We got that through. There was no real objection from anybody in the advocacy community. And then it got voted on unanimously out of the Senate and that our Senate committee, Commerce Committee. And that was an incredible moment. And when I'm talking about, like, you know, that one golf shot that makes you, brings you back into the game. That was that. I was like, this is finally happening. We're good to go.
Unanimous consent. Unanimous. Incredible.
Yep. That was in July, you know, and then the bill kind of languished there. I and another one of our board members, Habiba Al-Sindor, co-authored an op-ed in the Albany Times calling on Schumer, like, just bring it to the floor. It's ready. We've got the votes. Let's do it. And it still kind of languished. And then the Washington Spirit got involved and they helped us do a huge petition drive and they flew our flag at their last home game and in Audi Field. And, you know, we got more and more and more. And then I'm driving to meet some friends and I get an email from Senate staff. And it's like, hey, the bill passed unanimous consent out of the Senate today. This is, you know, beginning of December. And so what unanimous consent is basically the leadership has decided that no one's going to object to this bill and they're just going to let it go through, that they're not going to take up floor time. They're just going to let it go.
Unanimous.
Unanimous. Right. Miraculous. We did not, I could not have predicted that outcome. Now we've got to scramble and get the House to do this, right? We've got 2 weeks. 2 weeks to get this done. And back to our comment on timing, our saving grace was we had this omnibus bill going and Congress could not go home until the omnibus was passed. And so we start pushing and pushing and pushing. We send letters. We get more than about a dozen members of Congress to write the leadership of the House to say, pass this bill. And so then this is where my roller coaster.
I have the chills right now. I have the chills.
We get told the bill is going to be put on what's called the suspension calendar, which basically means that they're going to say no one in the House is going to object to this bill either. We're just going to pass it, get it over with, move on. Until one member of the House got up, and I remember texting with you on this. I was like, oh, it's going to pass. Don't worry. Then he gets up and goes, I'm going to call for a roll call vote. And which means that he wants every single member of the House to vote.
Wow.
And so then we got to wait till like 8 o'clock at night for them to cast, do their votes. And ultimately it was 350-59, you know, so to your comment on, is this bill bipartisan? The last version, clearly, you know, clearly it was 350 yes votes. And then after that point, it's just waiting for the president to sign it. And, you know, he signed it with, several other bills. So it was, you know, not a big fanfare. You know, for all of his behind the scenes work, it was very, you know, it just kind of happened. And, it was great. Yeah. It was historic. January 5th is a day that's going to stick in my head for a long, long time.
Oh man. You know, the final steps came together quickly. But no less momentous. No big fanfare. Like you said, you guys are the men and women behind the scenes, but January 5th is an important date that we should all remember. It's historic. And it's going to make a better life for all fans and athletes alike here in the United States. Why hasn't there been a big fanfare? We talked about earlier, all these men and women, these Hollywood stars, these athletes who have come out and spoken about blanketed equality and have spoken about equal pay. Now we have this historical bill passed and there's no big fanfare. There hasn't been a lot of media who has caught on to this. Maybe they don't know about it. I'm not sure, but why hasn't it gotten the attention that is very much deserving?
It's hard to say. You know, part of it is a lot of us advocates that were really pushing this bill come from small organizations. You know, SFC is not a big shop. And so we don't have the big press arm that's pushing out constant, you know, digital strategy or social media ads. And like, you know, so we're not able to make nearly as much noise as, say, you know, the U.S. Soccer Federation could, heralding this passage. But I also think, and maybe this is a little bit of Washington cynicism that I've absorbed over the years, but, you know, there was a lot of wind taken out of the sails when the women signed their CBA. As historic and great as that CBA was for the team, current team, a lot of people thought, oh, equal pay is solved. Nobody thought about the fencers or the swimmers or the gymnasts and what they needed from this bill. And I remember sitting at, you know, Washington Spirit, trying to get fans to join this petition and call on the vote. And I had several people say, I thought this was done with. I thought we had solved this with the CBA. I was like, no. This is more than soccer. This is everyone. And so I think that may have been, you know, soccer was the big press story for why we needed equal pay in the first place. But what they were fighting for was so much bigger. And we wanted to finish that fight.
I got the chills again. I have the goosebumps right now. You said it. What the U.S. Women's National Team class action lawsuit was fighting for was so much bigger. It didn't get done across all sports, across the landscape of American national teams and NGBs. Sports Fans Coalition and all their partners and everybody involved, our dear friends over there at the University of West Virginia and everybody in between, finished the work that was started. And I commend you for that, Brian. Thank you so much to all the men and women at Sports Fans Coalition, to Senator Cantwell and Senator Capito. Thank you for standing on law and principle to continue to fight in a meaningful way for equality. You, Brian, and all at Sports Fans Coalition have truly made the sports arenas, the soccer pitches, and the stadiums throughout America a more enjoyable place to be. Thank you for being with us here today.
Thank you, Hope. It's been great talking with you. And I want to also just make sure that we thank all of the staff that worked on this bill. You know, this was really a staff-driven bill as well. They are the lifeblood of our democracy at large. And they did a remarkable job working on this as well. So to the U.S. Senate Commerce staff, the members' offices, everyone we've worked with, you know, thank you for helping us make history.
Hope Solo Speaks is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcasts.
SiriusXM Podcasts.